Thank you. Item 9, again, turning it over to Karen Levy. This is the legislative update. Very interesting slew of bills.
Thank you. It is quite a lengthy memo that you have here from me summarizing legislation. It is included in the agenda packet. We'll go through each bill. Basically, these are pending bills, so they have not yet been enacted. They're in the legislature. They're being heard. They're being amended. Today, June 22nd, I noticed that there's a lot of these bills are actually set for a hearing today. Right. So things might change, amendments, various things might happen today. And so basically the governor has until September 30th to sign or veto bills passed by the legislature. So there is some time. If any of these are enacted, they would be effective on January 1, 2023, unless they are an urgency legislation, which one of these bills are, and we'll go through that. So
just before you begin, let me suggest that just given the nature of the legislative process, and as you pointed out, I'm following a number of bills that are being heard today as well. So there are going to be changes. Some are going to make it, many aren't. So I would suggest or request maybe that you sort of hone in on the more important bills that are directly germane to us and could affect us in one way or the other, and sort of highlight those as opposed to going through everyone, because I'm sure everybody, I went through the packet, I'm sure we all did. So that'd be my suggestion, is maybe hit the highlights in your mind as to the ones that really matter.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. Actually, the first two bills that are listed, AB 498 and AB 826, have become irrelevant at this point, so we can simply skip those. AB 1824 has a number of changes to the SURL. We've reviewed those with our staff. They don't seem to really create any issues or change the way in which benefits are being administered here. So I'll see if there's any questions about this one, but I'm happy to move on to the next, which is AB 1971. So are there any questions about AB 1824?
Do not see any hands.
Okay, so AB 1971 would be an expansion on the ability to purchase service credit for uncompensated leave. Currently, that is allowed if the member was ill, if they were out because of their own illness. The expansion that's proposed in this bill would be subject to approval by the Board of Supervisors. So it wouldn't be effective in this county if it passed unless the Board of Supervisors adopted it. And the expansion is to allow the purchase to cover a situation where the member is out due to the illness of a family member, not the illness of the member themselves.
Okay.
In addition,
Karen,
yes.
And that purchase would be the employee who would,
yes,
have to fund that
correct
gap.
Yes, the employee would have to pay the retirement system what the contributions would have been for that service credit. In addition, it adds an option for those who are retired who would like to serve as a part-time board member. They can do that without having to reinstate their membership. I'll go to AB 2493. That bill has to do with disallowed compensation and benefit adjustments. This, we heard this morning, actually did come out of committee this morning with some amendments. We don't know what the amendments are. So I'll generally describe what this is, knowing that there are apparently amendments to it. So we'll have to study it once we understand what the amendments are. But this has to do with disallowed compensation, meaning compensation that was reported to the system as pensionable, but that the system determined is not pensionable, maybe inconsistent with, you know, PEPRA or the SERL. In those situations, this bill sets forth the mechanics of what happens. The compensation can't be included in pension calculation, but contributions were collected. And in some cases, members might have retired with that compensation included. So basically, this lays out a mechanism by which the contributions would be refunded or credited to the employer, and then the employer would refund to the employee contributions that the employee paid. If the member is still active, then that takes place. If the member is in a retired status, then the system has to exclude the disallowed compensation from the pension calculation. And there are a number of conditions that are set forth in the this bill that if they are satisfied, then it would be the employer that would pay the retirement system any past overpaid benefits, and also would pay the retiree a penalty of 20% of the present value of future lost benefits.
Whoa. I'm sorry, one more time on that. It pays the, I just didn't understand what you said. It pays a penalty to the retiree?
Yes.
For which?
The employer would pay a penalty to the retiree, essentially to provide some sort of a restitution, if you will, for the fact that the retiree is now losing a portion of their pension benefit because of the disallowed compensation. If you're having a reaction to this, the same reaction was felt by employers that read this, and so they filed an opposition based on this aspect. And I'm thinking that today's amendments probably are a reaction to those oppositions that have been filed. So it remains to be seen what this bill actually looks like after it comes out of committee today, and whether it's amended further and whether it actually goes anywhere. So we'll keep watch on this one.
Well, interesting.
Yes, I'm sure a lot of people will.
Yes. So, I mean, what it really says is, even if there is such a thing as an honest mistake, and I continue to believe there are such, that the employer honestly has misreported something, the pension fund has calculated accordingly, and when it is found that those benefits were being paid erroneously, they are refundable to the plan and perhaps the employee if they made a contribution, but the sponsoring agency also pays a penalty for having taken away a source of income that the employee had been counting on, or not counting on, had come to a point where they were relying upon.
Yes, that is the concept. And this came out of Orange County. It was an Orange County only legislation that then was amended to apply to all SERL systems. And what happened in Orange County was it had to do with deputy sheriffs who were told by the system that because of the Alameda case, the Alameda decision, on-call pay would no longer be included in compensation earnable. And this was their reaction. And I didn't mention it before, but it is mentioned in my memo that this legislation would only apply to sworn peace officers and firefighters. Those are the only members that this would apply to. And it's meant to protect active members and retired members who are faced with a situation of, hey, we thought this was included, we've been paying contributions on it, and now you're telling me that it's not included. So
they are getting the contributions returned.
Yes.
But this is a penalty. Is the, we're probably drilling down too far because it could have been amended, but was the penalty actually defined? Is it like 10 times, 50 times, equal to whatever? Was it defined?
Yes, it's defined currently in the version that we're looking at today, which might have been amended. It's defined as 20% of the present value of the future loss in benefits.
Yeah, I'll bet the employers are looking at it. Okay, thank you.
Karen, why does this only apply to safety? Is that just because that's the way it's written? I mean, I would think that it'd have more global application. But...
Yeah, in the way it's written, it only applies not to safety, but it only applies to sworn peace officers and firefighters. I can only assume that those are the unions that are pushing for this legislation.
Currently.
All right. I don't see any other questions.
All right. We'll move on then to the Brown Act legislation. And AB 1944 is one. And basically, it would allow a member of the legislative body, so a trustee in our case, would be allowed to not attend the meeting virtually from a different location, but be exempt from identifying the address of their location. And this is in order to allow members of the legislative body to keep their home address private and not have to open it up to the public. The bill would require all open and public meetings of the legislative body that elects to use teleconferencing to provide a video stream accessible to members of the public and an option for the members of the public to address the body remotely during the public comment period through audio, visual, or call-in option. So that's basically what we have today in this virtual meeting, where folks can participate on Zoom or call in order to make public comment. So that's one bill. The other one is AB 2449, about a similar topic. And this one would authorize the local agency until January 1 of 2028 to use teleconferencing without complying with the usual requirements, namely, you know, posting the agenda where you are and opening the location to the public, if at least a quorum of the members of the legislative body participate in person from a singular physical location clearly identified on the agenda that is open to the public and situated within the local agency's jurisdiction. So translating that, the board would need to have a quorum. So that's five members physically present in an open location that is open to the public. And then others could participate via teleconference and would not have to post an agenda where they are and disclose their location. But that exception is allowed. It's limited to three consecutive months. So that can be done for three consecutive months under this bill.
By a member.
By a member, correct.
Right. So that limit is on the same person being the one that's appearing remotely, right?
Yes.
That's how I read it.
Okay, so moving on to AB 2647. This has to do with the distribution of agenda materials. Basically, if after the agenda is posted, there are additional materials that are provided to the trustees, under current law, those materials have to be provided to the public as well. They have to be made available. So if you think back to an in-person meeting, if we have handouts, we have to make sure that we have enough handouts to hand out to members of the public. So they have to be made available. This particular bill allows the board to publish those additional materials online. So if you add it to the website and you make it available there, You would not necessarily have to have physical copies distributed to the members of the public. So that is a pending bill as well. Just making it a little easier for agencies to post these materials and be in compliance. Moving on to SB 1100, this has to do with orderly conduct at board meetings, and it would authorize the presiding member of the legislative body conducting a meeting to remove an individual for disrupting the meeting, and the bill would require removal to be preceded by a warning to the individual by the presiding member of the legislative body. And so basically, they need to be provided with a warning and an opportunity to correct their behavior. But if there's still a disruption, then the board officer may remove them from the meeting.
How do you enforce that, though? You'd have to have a deputy or somebody at the meeting.
It would be helpful to have a security guard, yes.
I actually thought that right already existed. I know that it comes up from time to time at Board of Supervisors meetings. I think it did recently, actually. I think there's an inherent ability to do that based on the circumstance. I guess having a legislative authority to do it's helpful, but I thought we already did have that ability.
Yes, the law actually does currently allow the removal of a member of the public if they're disrupting. This, I think, just makes it more specific about the presiding officer's role and giving them a warning before removing them.
Got it.
Okay, moving on to AB 1993. I thought that was interesting, and I included it here. It is a COVID-19 vaccination requirement that would require employers, both private and public, to require each person who's an employee or an independent contractor to show proof to the employer that they were vaccinated, unless they fall within an exception. This bill, though, has been stagnating for a long time, so I'm not sure if it's actually moving anywhere, but I thought it would be of note, and we should at least watch it. So SB 1328, so now we get to put on our investment hat again, just like we did earlier for the blockchain discussion. Now as an investor, we do occasionally have bills from the legislature regarding divestment. This has to do with investments and contracts in or around Russia and Belarus, and it's a response to the war in the Ukraine. Basically, this bill would prohibit the retirement boards in California, the public retirement boards, from making any additional or new investments in companies that are defined in the statute, basically domiciled in Russia or Belarus, or companies that supply military equipment to the aggressors in the conflict, and liquidate those investments. Now, basically the bill, in addition to the actual divestment, would require by the end of this year, the boards to file a report outlining the investments that fall within this category that are owned by the retirement system, and also whether or not the system divested from them, and if not, the reasons why. The bill does include a condition, and that is that no divestment action is to be taken or is required unless the board determines that the divestment is consistent with its fiduciary responsibility. So the legislature here is not, it's not a blanket requirement to divest. It is up to the board to make a decision on whether that is consistent with the board's fiduciary responsibility.
Karen, it's probably addressed here, but maybe we're talking about splitting hairs, but I think you have to be careful about some of this stuff, because if you'd interpret aggressor broadly enough, there is a position taken by some countries that Ukraine is an aggressor. Now, I don't take a position on that, and common sense would suggest that's probably not accurate, but there are a lot of countries that are, and companies that are providing them with materials. So that's going to be an interesting thing to try and nail down. Who's the aggressor, and which companies are, you know, does that mean Lockheed? Does that mean McDonnell Douglas? Does that mean people like that?
The legislation currently defines it as basically consistent with the definition of the United States government. So you basically have to follow the United States government's definition of who an aggressor is.
This is a very complicated situation that's been discussed as hackers also. And a lot of investments in Russia at this time are pretty much worthless. And then also, if there is some value, you can't sell it. So it's very difficult to completely clean your slate of any such assets on paper anyway. And I don't think that'll be cleaned up until after the conflict is over. But a lot of systems are having some challenges with this. I mean, the spirit is don't invest in the aggressor in Russia, which a lot of folks can understand. But the actual application of it is a different story.
The market also has a way of taking care of a lot of that investment. I think we had heard early on in the conflict from our investment staff that a number of positions for pension funds all over the world, certainly in the United States, were actively disengaging from a lot of those assets, either voluntarily or involuntarily by reason of market sanctions and conditions. So there's so many exposures that various funds might have to some element of an area of conflict like this that it's very difficult to track. But the market often takes care of a lot of that divestment.
If you extend the logic on this, it's not inconceivable to see China taking aggressive action against Taiwan at some point. And the number of Chinese investments that plans have is far more extensive, I think, in China than it is in Russia and Belarus.
Yeah, staggering. Food for thought. So Karen, any other pending bills? I know that there was an SB 1173 that died, I think, day before yesterday or whatever. That was a bill directed at CalPERS and others to divest from fossil fuels, but it died. So I was kind of keeping my eye on that one. So,
yeah, no other bills to discuss today. And that pretty much concludes our presentation, unless there's any further questions.
All right. If I don't see any further questions. So thank you. Very interesting, as always.
Thank you.